Hello, everyone. Welcome to JTalk Extra Time. My name is Stuart Smith, and the band are back together because on the other end of my Skype call should be John Steele. John, how are you?
Hi, Stu. Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. Happy to talk to another human being live this week. Yes, it's good to have you back.
Yes. I should put on record my thanks for John doing the heavy lifting for the reviews of J2 and J3 last week. It's been a busy old summer for a lot of us, and John really came through last week, and you lucky patrons got to see his face as well. Imagine that. But yes, so John, we're back together, and by the time people listen to this, hopefully people will have already listened to the kind of very brief wrap-up pod, the J2 briefing that I put out earlier, which gives us a little bit more license to talk about some things in depth about J2. And does that sound good?
Yeah, maybe we could call this the J2 debriefing, if that doesn't sound too innuendo laden.
So the briefing and the debriefing are perfect. That's what we shall do. Okay. So, we got three topics this week, John. The first topic doesn't include any of the top three. We usually talk about Gearbrand's Kitakyushu, Nagasaki and Tokushima Vortis on a weekly basis on the podcast. But I want to focus on the group of teams, the stalking horses just behind them in the table. So the group I'm looking at are from fourth place down at Vanfori Corfu are in fourth place. Kyoto Sanga in fifth place. Jubilo in sixth. Niigata in seventh, and Avispa Fukuoka in eighth. I'm going to ask you in a minute, John, about which of these teams you think might be primed for a run at the top two. But just to give a little bit of context to everyone, Vanfori Corfu are four without defeat. They've taken 10 points from their last 12. Kyoto Sanga have won three on the spin. Jubilo are unbeaten in seven, but they have drawn five of those games. Albrecht's Niigata were in good form, but they were beaten at Gearbrand's Kitakyushu at the weekend. And Avispa Fukuoka have won their last three, and they have a game in hand, which we shall come on to later on in the podcast. But they've won their last three, and they could make it four when they play Omiya on Wednesday. So, John, out of that group of teams, I know it's a bit of a wide variety of teams we've got there, but do you have any inkling or any feeling as to kind of, A, if one of those teams or more of those teams could make it into the top two, and B, who do you think it might be?
So no pressure.
No, you know, pressure.
If you have a week off,
no
and pressure. Come back and throw me straight under the bus.
We're all friends here. Yeah, so it's all good.
Good. Yes, I know. It's just joshing, just bands. I think, to be honest, it's a real shame that we don't have playoffs this season, although I understand the reasons why, because that the group of teams that you mentioned, Kofu, Kyoto, Iwata, Niigata, and, you know, Fukuoka just coming up hot on their heels as well. That group of 4/5 teams would make a really interesting playoff quartet, wouldn't they? I think there is a chance for one of these teams to sneak into the top two, because I do think, whether it's COVID related, finance related, or just just this particular season, I don't see an outstanding team in the group that we're talking about now, or even in the top three. I think we can probably say Tokushima play the best football, and I know the definition of best can vary from hipster to hipster, but I think Tokushima play the best football. But from the group that you mentioned, I don't know if they're my favourites to watch, but I do have just a sneaky feeling that I think Iwata haven't really clicked into top gear yet. Just looking at their stats of that group of teams, they have the best goal difference, don't they? +9, and they're unbeaten in, is it 7 or 8? I know a lot of the games in this run have been draws.
They're unbeaten in 7, and 5 of them have been draws.
So of the group that we're discussing, they're the they've got the best goal difference on +9, and along with Niigata, they've only lost 4 games so far. I know Kofu in fourth have only lost 3. Their goal difference is only +6. Now, we're talking about very fine margins here, and obviously the fact that we're playing 2 games, 3 games a week means that things change very quickly. But my gut feeling is Iwata haven't really shined yet. They haven't really clicked into top gear. I think that's because they're a good team who haven't found just quite the right balance or the right chemistry yet. I could be wrong. It could be that they're an average team who've actually overperformed so far. But we were talking a little bit in the green room, weren't we, about Koki Ogawa, for example. It's very hard to bet against a team that has him to call on up front, even though I think his form this season's not been that good so far. They also have Lukian, who at times doesn't convince, but I think his goals record is pretty good. And Lulinho as well, to come in off the bench, sometimes doesn't convince, but it's good. And I think Seiya Nakano, who's also used up front in the rotation, would be a regular starter. A lot of other J2 teams, I think. So the strength in depth, in the midfield and up front. I think the defence is suspect at Iwata, but I think you can get away with that a little bit in J2 if you do have the exciting front players and the ball spends most of its time away from the back three. But there have been a couple of clangers, haven't there, with Jubilo's defenders already this season. So for me, it would probably be Iwata, but it's a gut feeling rather than based on any hard evidence, really, apart from the goal difference that I mentioned and the fact that they don't lose. They draw too many games, but at least that means they're not losing them. What about you, Stu?
No, I don't answer these questions. You answer my questions.
Oh, right. I see. Okay.
That's how it... Okay. When there's two people on this podcast, that's how it works. So...
The tree of trust down.
Everything you said about Jubilo makes sense, and yeah, they just have a variety of means to attack you. So Lulinha and Koki Ogawa and Kotaro Omori as well. I think we should put him into the mix as well. They're kind of small, mobile, elusive kind of players, whereas Lukian's more your traditional target man. Seiya Nakano kind of flits between the two definitions. They haven't impressed. I nearly fell into a Shania Twain thing there again, but they haven't impressed. But the fact that they're still up there within kind of striking distance, so they are what, 9 points off second place, yeah, something like that. And without really hitting their stride, I think they only hit their stride basically when they thumped kind of Twig and Kanazawa back what seems like ages ago, but it probably wasn't.
Let me piggyback on that point just for a second, because one thing I wanted to say was, of the teams that we're talking about now, and I think it's something that's come up on Twitter a couple of times now, I've sort of half answered it and not really gone into detail. As the season goes on, you know, a month from now, we're going to be seeing a lot of teams with nothing to really play for, aren't we? Because there's no playoffs, no relegation. There'll be a lot of dead rubber games, if you like. Of the teams that we're talking about here, I fancy Jubilo to be the team that is most effective at beating those teams when they come. I mean, you mentioned the Kanazawa game where Jubilo could have just rode that one out at 1-0, really. But instead, they ended up scoring 5 more. You know, in pretty much, you know, in the second half. And Kanazawa were very tired and it was a weakened team, so it's not really any criticism of them. But I think Jubilo is the team that have that forward line and that midfield that can really pile on the goals in that kind of situation.
I think they have a slightly kind of J1 mindset in the sense that I think that they feel that they can go out and bully teams. And I think something that you mentioned last week was the return of Masaif, is he Uzbek? Is he Azerbaijani? I can't remember. That's probably really offensive to him. So I hope he's not listening.
Reaching for my Maycan, but I think he's Uzbekistan. This is the kind of thing I think we should be getting right now.
He hasn't really played that much in J2. I think he's been out injured for quite a long time, and
Uzbekistan is correct.
Uzbeki, okay. So he's an, and he's, I think he looks the part as a as an enforcer in the middle of the field. I think he could be the missing link to this side, just someone to kind of stifle opposition attacks, to stop them kind of getting at the exposed core of the Iwata defense before things get dangerous. So I think having him come back in, I know we spent like the last 5 or 10 minutes talking about their attack, but I think having Masayev there might be a game changer for them, because I think it might make them a bit more rigid when it comes to defensive work, which allows their attacking kind of prowess to come to the fore a little bit more. I think the team that's impressed me the most out of that group are actually Corfu. I think their manager Akira Ito is putting together quite a good resume, because this is the second really good side that he's formed. Of course, they were beaten in the playoffs last year at Tokushima Vortis, and they saw Peter Utaka move on, and it's, he just keeps kind of building kind of teams. They're not a team of superstars. I mean, off the top of my head, I probably couldn't mention more than half their starting kind of lineup. But I think that's where someone who is, yeah, who knows his craft and knows what he wants from his teams. His teams play in a very kind of deliberate way, and they're players that are brought in for the system. They're not kind of good players that don't fit into a system. They are players that Ito knows can do a good job. Dudu's out, so you bring in Mike Havner. They lose Soneda to Kyoto. That's all right. You've got Ota Shinsuke to come in. Like these kind of things. And like, I think that, Corfu are the team that are impressing me kind of the most out of those, out of that group of teams, basically.
Yeah, I think one point about Corfu is, I want to mention, is they also play with a back three, don't they? It's in vogue in J2, but their back three has a lot more, to be blunt, ability than Iwata's, for example, in terms of ball playing and also goals. Like their defenders pop up with a lot of shots and a lot of goals.
So
it's not such a there's not such a reliance on those strikers to score goals necessarily. And I do think as well, Jin Izumisawa, you know, in the kind of the second row behind a target man, he did score a good goal, I think, in midweek or possibly the weekend before. It's all blurring into one now, but he really does have the ability to be a top draw. He has the ability to have a kind of Hayato Nakama level influence on that team. For me, and he's just not quite happened yet this year, but I think if it does, and we see the Izumisawa that we saw at Omiya a couple of seasons ago, then that can only be a good thing for Corfu.
Yeah, so I mean, all of that group of teams are you have to keep their eye on them, because the games, and we'll come on to the fixtures coming up later on, but there are some big games this weekend. But I think we'll take a change of pace, John, and we'll go into the mid-table. And you might think, well, why are we going into the mid-table? And it's because I want to pay a bit of a tribute to two teams that are geographically relatively close, and they don't usually get a lot of kind of props or a lot of kind of love from the global J2 community. But the two teams I'm talking about are Tochigi and Mito Hollyhock, both of them based just north of Tokyo. They contest the Kitakanto Derby, as it's called in Japan. Both of these teams are kind of, shall we say, well, they were a popular pick to be down at the bottom this year. Now, Mitor lost a lot of talent, and they obviously lost their manager. And Tochigi just scraped away from relegation on the final day of the season. But what these two teams have done so far this year has been really, really good. But the interesting thing, and the thing that I wanted to kind of point out, is that they've gone about it in very different ways. One of the interesting kind of kinks to this is that they both have a goal difference of zero. So they both scored as many goals as they conceded. But in the same amount of games, Tochigi have scored and conceded 15, but Mito have scored and conceded 29. And mm-hmm. So it's a very stark kind of dividing line between them. There's only 3 points that separate them in the table. Tochigi are on 27 points and Mito are on 24. Tochigi's rise is based on a very solid kind of 4-4-2. Everyone knows what they're doing. Whereas Mito Hollyhock are playing some kind of hybrid, like Arsene Wenger, Arsenal / Barcelona / J3 style defense going on. And it's kind of interesting to see those two kind of low budget teams go about things in different ways, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. I think you're sort of watching art house, versions of Hollywood action movies here, with like two completely, very different visions from the directors or managers in charge. I think on Tochigi, they were pretty horrible to watch last season. I think it's no exaggeration to say it. What I've been really impressed with this year is Kazuaki Tasaka, the manager. I always thought he was a good manager, but I wasn't confident enough to actually say it on record, because I wasn't sure if he was going to prove it. But this year, the improvement, with literally no resources really, has been got to the point where, I mean, I very closely watched their game against Tokushima last midweek, right, because the Patreons made me. I was very impressed. I mean, like you said, there's nothing... there's no surprises, I don't think, when you play against Tochigi. And it's similar to Kofu, there's probably a couple of players in the starting lineup that you can't name off the top of your head, because they're not household names. It's very much a team. It's a team effort. I've been so impressed with Shuhei Kawata, the young goalkeeper, because I don't think he's probably expecting to play as many games as he has. But he's looked really good every game that I've seen. So that, yeah, they do have that strong basis. And I think... they had the strong basis under Tasaka last season, but once the ball was cleared from that strong defence, it really was a case of feeding off scraps. And I don't think Henick expected to play that many games up front. obviously it's not really his best position. But I think they've done really well to bring in players to help them. Like Kisho Yano doesn't always play, but he's obviously the kind of Chong Teze type good influence on the squad, I think, for example. And they're enjoyable to watch. And I'm never going to say anything bad about a team that has like every chance they have to get a long throw into the penalty area. They throw the ball long into the penalty area, towels around the edge of the pitch, that kind of thing.
I'm amazed that teams don't have one player in their squad who takes a long throw. I've actually seen a long, long, long time ago. I've actually seen a team develop someone just to take long throws. Like I've seen when I was younger, one of the teams I played for, they at the end of each training session, they gave the I think it was the left fullback, gave him you know what a medicine ball is, right?
Yes.
For people who might not know what that is, it's a very, very, very heavy ball.
It'd often be the punchline in the Bash Street Kids in the Beano.
Oh, we're getting very niche now, yeah. I think. they had to do the throwing motion with a medicine ball, which weighed, I don't know, about 4 or 5 kilos maybe. And the whole reason for doing that was A, to build up the shoulder muscles, but also the key to a long throw is it's not the power, It's the actual timing. It's going through the throwing motion, like quickly. And I'm amazed that teams. I'm sure teams must know that, because like it's Tochigi. What's his name? Sagawa? Is it Sagawa who puts
Sagawa.
Along?
That's right. Yeah,
they're like bullets. They're like proper corners. Like, and so anywhere in like the attacking third, it's just they can send up the Takasugi, or they can send up Tashiro, or they can send up Yanagi, the big big defenders, because they know the ball's going to get into the box. And so I don't understand why other teams don't do that.
Well, yeah, Jeff have been trying it this year. It's a new thing that Masashima, the centre-back, has been taking long throws for them. Nowhere near as effectively as Segawa for Tochigi, it has to be said. But yeah, I used to play... We're diverging here, so I'll keep this very brief. We'll get back on track. But I used to play left-back when I played the game.
Interesting.
Obviously at a very low level. And as a full-back or side-back, in Japanese, you take a lot of throw-ins, but I used to get frustrated with players that never take throw-ins, don't know where to go, don't know where to move when you're trying to throw to them. So I'd often, like, players would stand, my teammates would be standing in a place where I could only foul throw to them.
Sure, yep.
Because they'd be too close. And then they'd be like, why didn't you give me the ball? I was free. And I was like, yes, you were free because you were standing an unreachable defender.
You could have just handed the ball to them, yeah.
Exactly. So I think it's a case of, again, just to get in a Stoke reference, as is custom, we can't talk about long throws without talking about Stoke City, but everybody knew when we had a long throw chance, everybody had a position in the penalty area, like a corner.
Yeah.
You know, it was basically if you gave away throw-ins pretty much in your half against a Rory Delap throw, that was like you had to defend a corner kind of thing. No, I'm with you. I think if I'm honest, I think one of the reasons why it doesn't catch on a bit more is there's a certain snobbery about it, and you know, you don't see Barcelona doing it, so it's not okay to do. Kind of thing. And I know Liverpool hired a specialist throw-in coach, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
And were subject to quite a lot of ridicule. But you can't find as many articles laughing at them now that they've won the Premier League. It's strange. But I'm totally with you. I think if you've got a guy, it'd be like having a guy who's good at taking free kicks. You know, well, he takes the free kicks, right? Yeah. If you've got that's good at throwing the ball in long, then you throw the ball in long. I think probably what managers don't want to do is they may be afraid of the label of it. I think to do it right takes a lot of work. I don't think it's as easy as, we're just going to be, you know, have long throws now. I think it takes work on the training ground. I think this season, as I discussed with Sam last week, there's not a lot of time on the training pitch to try new things. But yeah, I'm totally with you. If you've got a guy that can basically throw corners into the box, may as well utilize that. On Mito, I think again that, you know, they've done a really good job. I think you and I might be putting words into your mouth. I think we maybe both feared the worst when they lost all these, you know, kind of promising, exciting young players from the team, but it's been left to the likes of Nakayama up front, and I forget the name of the other striker. He scored a couple. It's Yamaguchi, isn't it?
Yes, Yamaguchi Kazuma.
Scored a brace against Yamaguchi at the weekend. But yeah, these two, you know, big bustling forwards, they've possibly even upgraded on Jefferson Baiana with Halef Pitbull.
Yep.
Who just seems to enjoy playing football so much. It's literally a joy. Joy to see him if he's not machine gunning his teammates with the corner flag or yelling down the camera, you know, behind the goal at nobody in particular. Good for him. And I think it's an interesting, you know, we had our pre-season, possibly it was during the hiatus, but kind of the finance edition of the pod, you know, how much money it cost to get one point in the league. And it's interesting that, you know, these two have ended up with pretty much the same number of points, but Tochigi have scored 15 goals to get those points, and Mito have had to score 29. Which team is doing it, in inverted commas, right, is a really interesting debate. And obviously they're both playing to their strengths, aren't they? Yeah, I don't see either of them going much higher, unfortunately. But considering, I think if you'd asked me, you know, pre-season prediction would have been for them to be in the bottom quarter, to be honest, of the table. So yeah, I think they're doing really well, and I really like Kai Matsuzaki, the midfielder who I don't actually see him involved as much recently. I think perhaps he's injured or just not in the starting lineup, not in the team right now. Very, very elegant, very well balanced player, very good passer. The kind of player who wouldn't get many games in Tochigi's midfield, I think it's fair to say, without wanting to sound that sounds like a knock against Tochigi, but it isn't. He's very slight, very kind of willowy, Shoya Nakajima type build. A really good player, and some of the assists I've seen him produce have been very impressive for such a young player as well. Yeah. Which of these two do you think will finish higher, Stu? I'll throw you another under the bus type question. And what represents a successful season for these two? Surely mid table obscurity would be considered pretty good.
Yeah, it does. I think I think Mito will finish higher. Just because I think that the goal scoring potential is that much greater than Tochigi. I think there's more risk for Tochigi in setting up defensively. But I think success for these two teams is, I mean, to be fair, and I don't know if this is kind of insulting both of these teams, but the success came for them when they announced when the J League announced there was no relegation from J2, because that meant they can kind of try and implement something. And you see it with the thing about Mito doing it is Yamaguchi Kazuma, he's on loan from Kashima. And if he keeps playing like this, he will go back to Kashima. It reminds me a little bit of Taiki Hirato, who went gangbusters at Machida, then went back to Kashima, couldn't get into the side.
You're talking about August's most Bravo player.
We are. That's the year's most Bravo slogan. I'm all about that. But Tochigi, a lot of their players are actually signed for them. Now, we all know the contract situations in the J-League are usually one-year kind of rolling deals and whatnot. So you're looking at someone like Takehiro Akimoto, who joined them straight from university, but was actually part of their youth system. Developing those players, developing the connection with the club and that kind of thing can only benefit Tochigi in the long term. And I think that with no relegation this year, it'll impact a lot of teams and a lot of games negatively, because there'll be less nervous energy. Like you said earlier, there'll be a lot of dead rubbers. But what I think it might do for some of the kind of less wealthy clubs is it might allow them to say, look, this year we can start to blood some youngsters. And you look at Kanazawa have done that, Tochigi have done that, even Ryukyu, they might not be doing so well at the minute, but they're blooding young players, which can only benefit them. And the only downside to it is that they have to write off this year, and I think that's what 20 teams in this league will be doing anyway, whether they kind of understand that now or not. But the building blocks are being put there, and I think that doing it via loan signings is a risky business. But doing it the way Tochigi are doing, because they're moving into a new stadium as well sometime next year. I think they're going to have a team name change as well that was scheduled for this year, but it's actually being put back until next year. So I think that the signs are pointing up for both of these teams, because Mito have a new stadium in the developmental stage as well. So interesting ways of going about it. But yeah, I think I wanted to bring attention to it because I think it's an interesting kind of way to look at things. And I think it's a good way to understand kind of what happens in the mid-table of J2. And because I'm such a professional at this now, John, I just said mid-table of J2, right?
Yeah.
You know what's coming up here, don't you? Omiya Adesia supporters. So,
yes, I remember now.
Yes. We're not going to talk about Jeff, all right? We're going to bypass them for this week. So, yeah. In the middle of the table and equidistant from the top and the bottom, we find Omiya Adesia, not exactly the kind of place that many people thought they would be occupying at this point in the season, John. We spoke a little bit before. They are 13 points off second place and 12 points off the bottom of the table. That's just not good enough, is it?
No, and I think it's a seamless kind of link between teams writing off this season and then to talk about Omiya. I think, one discussion we wanted to have on the pod this week was where can we draw the line for teams that can have a serious chance of catching the top two, you know, being in the promotion places this year. I think Omiya have such a good squad with a lot of talent, and obviously the addition of Iba, who's a proven goal scorer at the J2 level. You can't quite write them off just yet, but if they don't start winning, you know, in September, i.e. now, probably Wednesday night, I know we're going to get on to talking about that game in a minute, then it's not going to be long before we just have to write them off for this year, I think. It's not really happening, is it? I mean, we talked about Tochigi and how they have a reputation for being low scoring, stodgy in a good way, might be a nice way of putting it. But I think Omiya have only scored 16 goals so far. It's only one more than Tochigi, you know. I mean, if you'd said it pretty much the half, we're almost at the halfway point now, aren't we? 19 games played. If you told me that Omiya were going to be below Tochigi, I would have, I don't know. I don't know what I would have done. I would have had to stand up and pace around. You know what I mean? So I don't know. What do you think's gone wrong? I mean, the short answer would be everything, but they're not quite out of it. They have had some good results. I think that 5-0 drubbing at Ryukyu was a shock for me. So I assume it shocked a lot of the players and the supporters as well. I just didn't think they were capable of such a pitiful surrender. As they did produce in that kind of last 30 minutes of that game. Did you see any of that game? What did you make of that?
Yeah, well, I did see that game, and I was kind of taken, like everyone else, I was pretty much taken aback by the very kind of un-Takagi-like nature of it. They just surrendered, basically. And, you know, we're talking about where to draw the line. Like, Omiya have only won once in the last 8 games. Mm. And that was with, a late winner against Kyoto a few weeks ago. Like, I'm not sure how many more defeats they can withstand. In fact, I would say that they can only afford to lose at maximum 2 more games this year in order to reach the top two. I don't think they can lose more than that. Because, yeah, like I said, they're 13 points off second place. I mean, do you see them winning 5 more games than Tochigi in the second half of the year? It's a difficult question to answer in the positive.
Go on. Sorry, I'm sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, like, and it's interesting because their next 4 games are Fukuoka at home, who are in really good form. Then they travel to Machida, who are difficult not to crack on their home ground. And then they host Tokushima, and then they're away at Kyoto. Now, if they win all 4 of those games, I'll revisit my kind of status on them. But if they lose 2 of those games, I'm more than happy writing them off. And especially if they lose against Tokushima, like the gap just becomes almost unbridgeable. And like, yeah, they've got Iba now, and in any normal season, you'd think bringing him in at the halfway stage would be exactly the injection that they need. But it just, you look at him play, and he's so used to having, like, really, I'm trying to think of a word that doesn't offend like the Almir players, but really kind of competent
and incisive.
Yeah, that's the word. Like, he's had like Leandro Dominguez kind of supplying the bullets for him. He's had Koki Saito, like Nakayama. He's had all these Daisuke Matsui. He's had all these kinds of players who know where to put the ball and who don't dilly dally, and they just get on with putting the ball where it needs to be. Whereas Almir, I think since he's come in, that they just haven't kind of been on the same wavelength. I think they haven't clicked, and they're still kind of getting used to each other. And that's no one's fault, by the way. I'm not kind of saying that as a slight against anyone. It just, they just don't have enough time, and they don't have enough match practice to kind of speed up that process. And I think that I think he will come on leaps and bounds in the second half of the year. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see him score 10 league goals, but I don't think that'll be enough for Almir. I just think that they just can't afford to, they can't afford to lose more than two games. I genuinely believe that, and I think like this next kind of four game stretch will kind of determine their season. If they take 10 points from the next four games, I think they might be in with a chance. But if they take 6 points, I'm going to write them off, I think.
I think you made a really good point about the games they've got left in September, the next four games. I wanted to make the same point, but you've beaten me to it, so I'll go along with your analysis. If you look at the games in October, I know it's always a bad idea to look too far ahead, they look a bit kinder, don't they? Against Verdi, Tochigi, Jeff, Okayama, and Matsumoto. I'll give them another for this season. And then they host Nagasaki at NAC 5 at the end of October. Now, there is a universe, isn't there, Stu, where that could be a big game. If things go well for Almir for the rest of this month, and then they can pick up, you know, three or four wins in October, that they could be facing Nagasaki with a chance to get right up in the thick of the promotion picture. It is hard to bet against the team that has Iba, but also play like Shinozuka, for example, who we haven't mentioned for a couple of weeks. And also some good defenders and wingers in the team as well. But yeah, it's not clicked for whatever reason. And I think, to be honest, I like the idea of there being this big showdown with Nagasaki at the end of October, and Almir going on a big winning run. We have lots of Almir supporting friends, obviously, so we hope they do well. Just if only for the sake of the kind of messages we get than anything else. But yeah, I think it's far more likely that this season has to go down as another kind of missed opportunity, really, because as I mentioned, I don't think there's a single outstanding team that needs to be feared this season. I think it would be, it's a good season for a team like Niigata, for example, to get up there amongst the really fancied teams. But I think Almir are just going to fall short, and I think that will probably lead to a managerial change in the winter, because I don't think I think there is a scenario where Takagi could not get promoted and keep his job. But I think if they end up finishing 13th, I don't. I think the job becomes untenable at that point.
I completely agree with that. Yeah, it'll be interesting times in for the rest of September for Almir, and those interesting times begin this Wednesday when they host Avispa Fukuoka at the NAC 5. Of course, that game was postponed because of a COVID-19 related test for who is it? Is it?
It was a Hiroyuki Maya.
Hiroyuki. I was going to say Takayuki, but it's not Hiroyuki Maya. Yes. And it's come at the worst possible time for Almir, because Avispa are in really good form. They've won their last three, looking good, and I don't think Juanma Delgado will be in any kind of charitable mood when he makes his return to
what minute? The what minute do you think he'll get the yellow card?
Well, I think he'll get it out he'll get it out the way early. 8 minutes. He'll shoulder barge someone out the way and complain, and he'll get his yellow card. Yeah. I think, okay, yeah. John, just before we wrap up, because that's what we're going to do, this weekend is looking pretty nice on the slate. I think
confirmed bangers.
Oh, we've got plenty of them. So Corfu are hosting Kyoto. That's a 2 o'clock kickoff. So we're officially in autumn now, John. At the Big Swan, Niigata are hosting Tokushima Vortis. I'm really looking forward to that game. I think that'll be an absolute banger. Nagasaki are traveling to Matsumoto. That might be a tricky game for Nagasaki. I think Matsumoto just quietly maybe stumbled upon a formation and a set of players that work. Kitakyushu travel north to Yamagata. I think that'll be a tricky game for Kitakyushu as well. And yeah, Jubilo hosting Tochigi. That'll be an interesting clash of systems there, John. You've got 1 minute. What game are you looking forward to?
It has to be Kofu versus Kyoto for me, if only because autumn time means I can, hopefully I won't be as sweaty as I have been for the last 3 months. I think Kanazawa against Fukuoka could be an interesting game as well in the evening on Saturday, depending on how Fukuoka do at Omiya, on Wednesday night, as we mentioned. But Kanazawa, another team that I think has potential. Good days and bad days. But Fukuoka have been in really good form recently. What I'm curious about is I think Fukuoka have got the nucleus of a really good team. But I think at the moment they're an okay team in good form. I really want to see how long that form lasts. And if it lasts long enough, I think we can say we're looking at a good team rather than just an informed team, if that makes sense. That sounded, made sense in my head. Might not have made sense.
It made sense in my ears as well.
Matsuda against Omiya on Sunday. If Omiya don't win against Fukuoka on Wednesday, then I think that could be, obviously then the Matsuda game becomes huge. And as you mentioned, Matsuda going well, aren't they? And then they're no slouches at home, especially.
Yeah, that's right. So we've got a very interesting slate of games to look forward to. So we'll wrap it up there, John. And I think we've gone over some interesting points in this recording. To the Patreons, thank you very much for your continued support. John and I really appreciate it. And we appreciate the feedback and the questions and the comments and all that kind of stuff. Thank you ever so much to everyone who helps this venture keep going. Big thanks to all the listeners as well, wherever in the world you may be. And please stay safe during these times, and we hope you continue to enjoy the J2 and J3 football. We might have some J3 coming up later on this week, nod wink wink, if we can find time to record. But until then, I'd like to say thank you to John Steele, and thank you to all of you who listen. In the meantime, stay safe, enjoy football, and we'll speak to you soon. Goodbye for now.